Israel Apartheid Week is from March 1st to March 7th, and that's all around the world, right?
Last year there were 40 cities that participated. I think it started at least in Canada.
Let's just check that. Mark your calendars. It's across the globe. So this year is the 6th International Israel Apartheid Week, and it takes place from March 1st to the 14th of March 2010. And it was launched 2005 and has grown to become one of the most important global events in the Palestine Solidarity Calendar. Do you know much about what's happening in Guelph for IAW?
Yeah. Before we are talking about the event, I have the honor to take a small part in it. The whole week is going to be built on all kinds of lectures. There's a book tour by...
Yves Engler?
Yeah, by Yves Engler, which is... which wrote a book about the connection between Canada and the Israeli apartheid in the occupied territories, showing of films pertained and connected to the occupation. One interesting event that really caught my eyes, and I hope will catch the audience's eyes, is a film about lesbian and gay couples, Israeli-Palestinian lesbian and gay couple called Zero Tolerance. Which I'll even try to make a point to get into it, because both societies, I mean, Israeli society is a little bit more open in certain areas to gay and lesbian and transgenders, and sorry if I left anybody out, and Palestinian societies, as a very patriarchal and very conservative society, is not very tolerant, I assume. But even in Israel, recently we had a murder in a gay youth club. And there is a lot of intolerance. Not to mention, on top of that, the intolerance against Arabs and Jews living together and cohabiting together and apparently making gay lesbian couples. That's one of the events that really caught my eyes, and I hope the people that listen to us later or now will be caught into it and will come to it.
Yeah, and that's happening on Wednesday, March 3rd, 5:30 to 8:30 in the Kinning Room, 229 at the University of Guelph campus. And all the events in Guelph will be happening between March 1st to March 7th, so Monday to Sunday. Can you speak about
People's History,
the Saturday event?
Yeah, the Saturday event.
So it's Saturday, the March 7th, actually.
Saturday, March 7th, if you can look out. We didn't hammer really the little details of exactly when. But if you look into the, if you stay connected to the website.
It actually says 1 to 5.
1 to 5? Apparently 1 to 5.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, check out, what is it?
IWA.
IWA.
Guelph.
WordPress.wordpress.com. You can find there all the little minute detail of Israeli Apartheid Week.
In Guelph.
Well, all the events in the Israeli Apartheid Week here in Guelph are truly interesting.
Yeah, and so on Saturday, you're doing a presentation at 10 Carden Street, downtown Guelph, and you're presenting two documentaries. Do you want to talk about how you are involved with Israel Apartheid Week?
Yeah. We call the event the People's History of Israel. The Israel Apartheid Week is all about the boycott, disinvestment, and basically the economic boycotting of Israel, which I wholeheartedly support, at least in part, and maybe we can get later into this kind of debate. But when I thought about the Israeli Apartheid Week, when I got the word for the first time this year, I saw it as an opportunity to educate people, not just about the occupation, but about the societies that are involved in the occupation, in this long and protracted conflict of 100 years. I decided that the best way to do it, because making an academic speech would be, you know, too long and not really appropriate to this kind of event, the best way is documentaries. And there are a lot of good Israeli documentaries about the conflict, about Israeli society itself. And we decided after me and the organizing committee decided after a long thought and a long discussion on two films. The first one.
Oh.
The first one is Isco, The Slaves of Memory, an Israeli documentary which provides a critical look at the Israeli educational system and the way it shapes, basically, the soldiers of the futures, including yours truly.
Mm.
It's going to show the way the ritual and the culture, the connection of military, the Jewish faith and Jewish history and Israeli history are connected into Israeli educational system and produce the next generation of people that would carry out the perpetual war that Israel is inside it. I think it's a look into Israeli society, the way pro-Palestinian or left-wing activists don't look at Israel. Usually the image we have on Israel in the general media, and for us, and I'm talking collectively for us as activists, is the big bad bully with full battle fatigue threatening the little Palestinian kid. And this is sort of the, you know, the intifada image, the media image that we have. But we don't understand that behind this bully or this soldier, there's a whole system that brought an 18, 19-year-old boy, which is no different than you and no different from the other students here in Guelph, which have pretty much the same taste at times and pretty much the same language, although in Hebrew, and is part of global culture, to be that soldier. And I think this film gives us a look into how it's done. The film is a little bit old. It's from 1990. But the fundamentals in it are still operating today. I was a teacher in Israel for 2 years, and I've seen how it's work. A little bit of an explanation about what is Yizkor. Yizkor is a Jewish text, basically, which was secularized by Zionism in order to commemorate the old soldier. Yizkor means to remember or remembrance.
Hmm.
And it's a fundamental text in every state. Remembrance Day in Israel, every Israeli knows it. It's done in schools on a regular basis, and you'll see it in the movie. The second movie that we are going to show is Matzpen. Matzpen means campus in Hebrew.
Hmm.
It's about a small group of Israeli activists, anti-Zionist activists, that started to work in the early 1960s. During the event, I'm going to talk a little bit about both films, and I'll talk a little bit about the history of Matzpen, which is an interesting by itself.
Did you know those folks?
I've seen them because, okay. You know, the Israeli left is made of multitudes of dozens of peoples.
Okay.
It's very small. So I've seen them. I don't know them personally, but in many ways, they are our forefathers in some ways. Matzpen is a small group, was a small group of Israelis that objected to the occupation after 67. We are talking really on almost the starting point of this whole thing, of the renewed conflict between Palestinian Israelis after 67. They basically invented what we are doing here today. They were the first Israelis outside Israel that talked against the policies and against the state of Israel itself during the 1960s. An act that was unheard of in Israel at that time. Even oppositional parties that were against government policy altogether never done that. And they were the first. And they were branded, accordingly, they were branded as traitors by mainstream Israeli society back then. And they were very isolated, even at times even isolated from the Communist Party, which a large number of them originated there. And that's another question of their history, of their own history. Matzpen, of course, ceased to exist at the beginning of the 70s. It split up for all kinds of subgroups, small groups. But I think the spirit of Matzpen, of being the first ones to object to occupation, to make even the slogans that we shout today in demonstration, the basic slogans that we all shout, down with occupation, they were the first ones. They, of course, weren't the first one who were Arab-Jewish. It was an Arab-Jewish movement.
It was?
Yeah.
In
the Israeli radical left is always Arab-Jewish. It always tries, every organization tries to include Arabs and Jews together. That's the whole idea of left, internationalism and solidarity between peoples. And it was Arab-Jewish. There were Arab-Jewish bodies. The biggest one of them is, of course, the Communist Party that exists in Palestine and in Israel since the 1920s. But they were something new, something else. They have some similarities to the new left in Europe and the United States at that time, the 1960s, as you remember, the high point of the New Left. But there are some dissimilarities, and once again, this is for my small lecture at the beginning of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's as much as I can give
that's
about
okay.
those movies without ruining, you know, ruining the experience of watching them.
Why do you think Israel Apartheid Week is important?
Well, I have a certain critique about the movement of boycotting Israel. Not that I'm saying that boycotting Israel wouldn't work or is not without merit. I see it as an educational experience. First of all, education, you know, what you usually do with media or with books or in the classroom, sort of an activist way to educate people here in Canada, which is, of course, very far from the Middle Eastern conflict, about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, about who is the victim, who is the aggressor, and this is why I sort of initiated this event. I want to educate people to look at Israel, and I would be happy if some Palestinians here in Guelph would pick up the glove and show Palestinian society and how the conflict affects it. But I hope next year something like that will materialize, because there is Palestinian movies and there is a Palestinian, you know, there are Palestinians with cameras, either Arab Israelis are living in the territories that are looking into their own condition and saying what they are saying, critically or not critically. I don't know how. I would be really curious to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But I see it as an experience to educate the public about the conflict, not from, you know, the way mainstream media in the States and in Canada cover it, and not because in the West the Zionist hegemonic narrative of the conflict, ever growing since 67 and even since the 1950s, became the dominant hegemonic narrative that is explained to the public. And I want to counter it. On the one hand, I don't want to do something, you know, a dogmatic anti-Israeli, anti-Zionist evening, on the one hand. On the other hand, I'm not pretending here, and to the Jews and the Zionists among the listeners, I'm not pretending here to be something I'm not. I'm not Zionist, but I'm an Israeli, and I'm a Jew. And I want to show Israel in this small way as a complex society, which is made of people, which have their own desires and they have their own feelings. Some of them are dissenting, despite the fact that it's a small numbers. It is still influential. It has some results.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have the ultimate result, but it has some good results. Sometimes we're doing good at times. And I want them to appreciate Israel beyond that image that I talked about. Let's call it the CNN image of Israel.
Mm, yeah. What do you think about what's going on politically in Israel right now?
Oh, don't get me started. Okay, I've been in Israel a year ago during election. And I cast my vote then. And I've seen it firsthand. First of all, Israeli society. Israeli society is becoming progressively racist and religious. It's almost combined together. And I'm not talking about Judaism of the nice temple here in North America with the Sunday school. I'm talking about popular religion with a lot of racist undertones into it, of pushing the other and the Arab other, basically, out. There's a rise of fanaticism, of fanatical right, complete distrust in the Palestinians, and it has the consequences, the results in the voting, in the vote. The left, and I'm going to divert a moment here of what is the Israeli left, because it's not a monolithic group. But basically there are two groups. There's the Zionist left, which is a left that came from the kibbutzim and came from the Israeli or the Jewish labor movement. And there is the non-Zionist left, the radical left, or as I call it, the true left, the one that always kept the same course all the time. The Zionist left is, for all intents and purposes, dead in Israel. They are the victims of the failure of Oslo. They are the victims of the Second Intifada and the failure of the peace process. And in many ways, despite the fact that there are good people there, I'm sort of glad, because it was a left that in the right moment, when the moment came, recently the Gaza war, well, to say the Gaza massacre, when it was time to object, they didn't object. They voted for the war, and of course those who are soldiers participated in the war in Gaza. So in many ways, I'm not gloating for their faith, but basically, both historically and both electorally, they are not existing anymore. For the radical left, which politically I'm talking about the party system, not, I'm not talking about civil society or non-governmental organizations, which there are a lot of them, but at least politically speaking, in party-wise, the only representation, the biggest representation that we have is what is called Hadash, which is basically the Communist Party and other forces in sort of a front style, which is, you know, it's a party that for years is based on the Arab-Israeli vote, but started in this election to break the barrier between Arabs and Jews and get into new audiences in the Jewish left. And they started to vote, not exactly communist, but vote for this left party, this extreme left party. And we have four MKs, which is, you know, it's a small party, but, you know, you have representation in parliament and they have an ability to do things. So that's, you know, the silver lining in the sky that I can quote from Israeli reality. Basically, what is ruling Israel today is sort of a mishmash of what is called the Israeli center, which is what was left from the Labour Party, which was the hegemonic party in Israel for years, the Likud, which is the biggest right-wing party, and the sort of opposition, the official opposition, which is a party called Kadima, Forward. Basically, if you scratch the surface a little bit of being honorable and being honorable and state-like, all those figures, Bibi Netanyahu, the Prime Minister, Ehud Barak, Minister of Defense, Tzipi Livni, which is the head of opposition now, all those figures are nationalists. They are oriented into the Israeli elite, which is military and Jewish business people. We can call it Jewish capital. And they basically committed in one way or the other with, you know, small differences of tone, maybe, of perpetuating the occupation. And perpetuating this apartheid system we are talking about here today. So on the one hand, we have a political situation, we have an immense rise of the right, an assault, a terrible assault, and a very aggressive assault on democracy. They are taking into police inquiries left activists, and they are attacking the funding of a fund called the Fund for New Israel, which is, vaguely or not vaguely, is identified with the left. There is a string of police investigations into refusnik organizations like New Profile, Profil Hadash. And generally we see a beginning of what I can call McCarthyism in Israel, in a scale that was never seen before. We see an erosion of democracy as people are yearning for a strong leader. People are becoming progressively intolerant to other opinions, especially on the far, far left. And a society that is, as a consequence of the lesser democracy or the lesser quality of democracy and civil society, and, you know, the ever-growing poverty, basically, of large sections, even of the Jewish population of Israel, becoming more and more violent and, I'm afraid, very volatile and illogical. To the point that I'm really afraid that they would start a war with Iran without, you know, the American okay or things like that. But at least where we are standing now, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is sort of frozen into this perpetual conflict between the two nations. As for the Palestinians themselves, they are divided among themselves. In Gaza, there's a sort of fundamental Islamic mini-state in the territories, which are largely controlled by Israel. There's something in between, a puppet regime appointed by Israel of the old Fatah, Abu Mazen, and people like this and people like that. Very corrupt, very inefficient. They don't provide the Palestinians the government they deserved, basically. And I think isn't going nowhere, neither in history or in society. It's going to go somewhere. And my biggest fear that instead of going to South Africa with a, you know, peace and reconciliation committee and and sort of, you know, peace, we can go into Rwanda. And that's my biggest fear. Because, not because it was done, there was an ethnic cleansing in 48, but that's in the past. But the urges for annihilation are there in Israeli society. You ask 60% of Israelis, they would be happy to get up in the morning and don't see Arabs. We're talking right and left. The, you know, the stops that are going to erode it, eroding fastly. Either Supreme Court or all sorts, you know, judicial and moral inhibitions that exist in Israeli society. There is a moral debate. There was a moral debate even in Zionism. And that's my fear. I don't know how long it's, how far it is down the road, but I hope we can stop it.
Mm-hmm.
The sooner, but the better. On the other hand, we can stay like that forever.
How can Canadians relate to Israeli anti-Zionist groups?
I think the best way, since we are living in an internet and, you know, this communication revolution era, go on the web. Say Israeli Apartheid Week. Say Yesh Gvul, which is a very old refusenik group that still exists in Israel.
How do you spell that?
Yesh Gvul. I don't know how you call it in English. But say Israeli left, Israeli far left, Israeli anti-Zionist. Google it and see what you come up into and get yourself acquainted with what's going on.
Mm-hmm. How can Canadians work constructively with Israeli anti-Zionist groups?
Educate yourself, first of all, through the internet, and then see what those people need. Go on and see the websites of B'Tselem. There are human rights, a lot of good Israeli human rights groups that deal with Palestinians' rights. We need the Zionist and B'nai B'rit and the Jewish community in Canada, if we're talking specifically in Canada, has the ear of Stephen Harper. They have the ears of the government. The government is very pro-Israeli at that moment, in this political moment in Canada. We need the political clout. We need to show the Canadian government that Canadians don't support Israeli occupation. Maybe Canadians support Israel by itself, its right to exist. All those are legitimate and right causes, but occupation, violation of human rights, and the sheer meanness there is in the way Israel is treating the Palestinians is not something that Canadians should be or would be identified with. And the best way is to show it to the Canadian government, because, you know, this is the immediate target and it's the closest target. And join and support this boycott of Israel, because Israelis won't learn that there is a price for the occupation until it would hurt them economically.
Mm-hmm.
Or until it hurts the companies that do business with Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Until Israel would stop export its security knowledge all over the globe, including the United States. In every airport here, you know, there's an Israeli society that's doing security.
Mm-hmm.
If we'll hurt Israeli economically, and I'm not talking about the academic boycott, which is, it's ineffectual because academics are not that important in Israel. There's a good academia in Israel, I must say, and I'm part of it, but they're not important. But if Israel, and Israel is very sensitive to the way its image is portrayed around the world. See what happened in the Film Toronto Festival. It shows how Israel is very sensitive to its image, and there is a propaganda effort by the Israeli government. And this is one thing that Canadians can do.
So there was a film in the International Film Festival?
Yeah, there was an Israeli film. There was the Toronto Festival, the behest or under persuasion of the Israeli consulate in Toronto and the Israeli embassy in Ottawa, devoted part of the festival, as much as I remember, to Tel Aviv.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed a film there, not a very bad Israeli film, I must say, and known as The Bubble, about a Palestinian-Israeli gay couple.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a part of the way Israel wants to portray itself. And this is the way, you know, Jewish students here in Guelph wants to portray Israel. This small Canada in the Middle East where you can, you know, you can, two Palestinian men and Israeli and Palestinian men can have a relationship, which, you know, I have nothing against it. But when it's mobilized into showing Israel for what it is, it is part of its reality and a very small part of it, while most of the Israeli reality is very intolerant, both against both for gays and Arabs in general. And there is this, you know, there is this reality of occupation.
That's deceiving.
That's deceiving the public. And Israel is connected to the world. Israel is part of the Western world. Israel is part of global economy. We have the same crisis, economic crisis, as in the rest of the West, even worse a little bit. Hurt this connection. Make Israelis understand that if not for morality's sake, for the sake of their pockets, for the sake of the image, for the sake of the honor of us as Jews and Israelis, it's very important to Jews to be, you know, honored among the people. Kavod ben Amim, to those who understand me. Kavod ben Amim, an honor, to be honored among the people.
Mm-hmm.
That's important, our image. I consider what I'm doing here, despite the fact that 99% of Israelis and 100% of Jews in Canada would say quite the contrary, I see what I'm doing here as pro-Israeli. I'm saving our honor, our face. I'm telling people that not all of us are a bunch of monsters that, you know, that kill little children and, and, you know, and bombard civilian populations.
That captured a lot. Is there anything that we've learned so far, people who are organizing, who are trying to... Canadians who are trying to work constructively with Israeli anti-Zionist groups.
Yeah,
is there anything that we've learned so far with Israeli Apartheid Week that we need to do differently in the future?
One form of help is, you know, is what you call direct action, is the Israeli Solidarity Movement. Not Israel, sorry, the Palestine Solidarity Movement.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had a few days ago a commemoration for Rachel Corrie.
And Rachel is...
Rachel Corrie was an American volunteer who went to live in Palestine for a while and seen the reality there. She was basically ran over by an Israeli bulldozer. The trial that her parents are suing the government to say is about to start, or started already in Haifa. But she, as being basically the martyr of the movement, I think this is the best way. Go into Palestine, try and join the international solidarity movement, infiltrate into Israel, because Israel is trying to find the people that are coming into the international solidarity movement and kick them out, and do direct action. Stop the demolition of houses. Try to stop the army from doing what it's doing. If it would get enough media attention, if it would get one bulldozer not to work, you've earned your your way. It's not for the faint-hearted. I do appreciate people that do it. I wouldn't stand in front of a bulldozer, believe me. I think this is the most direct contribution that anyone can do. Of course, don't take it lightly. This is a war zone, so I'm not encouraging people to go and get themselves killed. At least even support it from here. I don't know how the international solidarity movement works. The best way is do international solidarity. Google international solidarity movement and learn what they are doing and see if it suits you or not, or what the way you can help them. I think it's a wonderful way to help.
How do you think Canadians can translate the Israel Apartheid Week that's being commemorated throughout the world into ongoing political pressure onto the Israeli government?
I'm not very involved in how Canadian politics work. Write to your MP. Make him understand that the next time there's a vote in parliament that is pro-Israel, maybe he should be the one that has a constituency that is not looking favorably on every, you know, every pro-Israeli act of the Harper government. Build the political pressure democratically, as you know how to build it. I'm going to say something, and I don't want to say condescending, but politics in Canada is not as important as politics in Israel. I'm more accustomed to a very fervent political culture and environment than the one I found here. Not there are not good people, even in mainstream politics. Get involved. And this is what I say. Students, it's, you know, the generation of tomorrow, all those cliches. Get involved, not just in the Israeli thing. You know, First Nations, migrant workers, you know, the down, as students. And this is how I, sort of the 60s perception of what is being a student, as being radical, and combined with that, not the solicity of being, you know, sitting in the ivory tower and making a demonstration, but going to the poor and the downtrodden, and this is the poor and downtrodden are the Palestinians in this conflict. Go unto them, find a way, and go unto them and shake this political indifference. And, you know, I don't think it's an appropriate line to say, a better world is possible in general.
because it's happening throughout the world, this commemoration of Israel Apartheid Week, how can the world in general, because you talked about Canada, how can we bring about effective global political pressure?
How globally?
It's a really big question.
It's a huge question, and I'm a very small man. Globally, through this kind of events, since we will acknowledge that most of the Western world live in a liberal democracy, the only way to show Israel that occupation apartheid is not viable anymore.
Mm-hmm. Like in an ongoing way, not just through...
In an ongoing way, is to convince Western governments. You have to understand that there is an unholy alliance between the West and Israel. We are doing their dirty job. Israelis are perceived by Western governments, I suppose, as don't have exactly the constraints that Western governments have to do in dealing with what they call Islamic terror. Very bluntly and brutally, I would say it, they think the Israelis kill Arab better than them. So if we'll, as global citizens, as global citizenry, we'll make our governments, our respective governments in France, Britain, the States, understand that we won't support them if they support Israel, they would say to Israel, enough is enough. And in that sense, we are talking about a global mass movement, and we are talking about mobilization, which, you know, it's beyond my humble abilities. The best I can do is an evening in Guelph. It's a start.
That's a lot to contribute your energy into.
Yeah. And it starts with, you know, with what we are doing here, with educating the public about what is happening. Educating the public about the complexities and the intricates of this conflict. It's running for 100 years, this conflict. And I think after 100 years, it's a good time to stop it, somehow.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Famous last words, and then he died.
Is there anything that you want to leave the listeners
with? I think the one thing I want to leave the listeners is that this week that we are doing is open to everybody, including people which don't agree with us. That's the essence of democracy, is the disagreement when it's made into the vessels of good, intelligent debate. And I encourage people from all political stripes, both in Canada and in Israel, to come to the events of the Israeli Apartheid Week. Even if you're a Jewish and a Zionist, don't be deterred by the manifest of the week and the kind of activities. My aim here is not to paint Israel just as the big bad bully. My aim here is to persuade people not at the destruction of the state of Israel, and not in, you know, in, I'm not advocating killing Jews as a son of a Holocaust survivor. I'm very well aware of Jewish sensitivities and fears, and I share them as a Jew. And what I'm telling to whatever Jewish audience that we have here, don't be deterred. Come on, see what is going on. Get educated, get enlightened. And as Jews, that the Israeli government relates to you as its captive audience, as the audience that will always support her, you are in the position of power to tell the Israeli government that as Jews, what the government is doing, the policies that the government is pursuing, is not Zionist, is not Jewish, and it's not human. And if you'll tell them that, and you tell the Israeli government that as Jews we won't support those policies, the occupation, we won't support, you know, we won't support the assault on democracy, on, you know, on people and organization inside Israel, which we maybe not, you know, we are not agreeing with them, but they have the right to their own opinion and even to their own actions, which at times are, you know, are considered unlawful in the eyes of, you know, of Israeli law. Even at that point, if you'll say that to them, as Jews, as mainstream Jews in Canada and the States, the Israeli government will listen to you. And remember this, that the Israeli government usually don't listen to you. They consider you their captive audience. Remember that the Israeli religious establishment mostly don't recognize even your religious practices. So even in the Jewish state, you are, those of you Reform and conservative Jews and Reconstructionists and all kinds of the stripes of Judaism in North America are not recognized by the Israeli state. So remember those facts. And remember that you are coming from a democracy where liberty and equality and all those values that you espouse to defend. And I'll be the first one to defend, you know, against anti-Semitism, be it Islamic, be it Christian, be it whatever. Remember the fact that as Jews, we suffered, you know, not very dissimilar approaches by dissimilar approach by, you know, by others. And when you come and say to the government of Israel, we won't support you, they will listen to you. And come to the IAW and participate knowledgeably and hopefully quietly as much as possible. Although I hope the debate will be with a little bit of fervent into it. And I hope to see you all there.
Yeah, and again, that runs from Monday, March 1st, to Sunday, March 8th, actually. It's March 8th. I just checked, yeah. Okay. And there's an event every day during that time in Guelph, mostly on campus and downtown. That's where the events are. Thanks a lot for coming on Migrant Matters.
Thanks.